Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. This month, we have a fabulous interview with UK author A.L. Brooks, and you'll hear that one in a few moments. But first, before we get into that, we're going to take a look at what's hot and what's not. Just what's hot. It just rhymed. In the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as filling you in on what I've been up to over the last month or so. And I'm coming to you today live from a very grey and rainy London town. It's apparently going to snow any second now, but it's quite dark, so I won't be able to see it. It'll be dark snow, maybe. But it waits to be seen. But it's raining so much, I can't believe it's going to snow. But who knows? Anyway, I hope wherever you are, you're either basking in sunshine or you're nice and warm away from the cold. So first up this month, we're going to have a look at the Amazon charts, and this month at number one, riding high in the US and the UK, we have J.A. Armstrong, aka Nancy Ann Healy, who has been on the podcast, and she's an all-round lovely person. I think the podcast was around number 20, so have a look back, and if you'd like to listen to Nancy speaking about her career in writing. But anyway, J. Armstrong is continuing her By Design series with a spin-off called Lesson Plans. So if you love the By Design series, this is a must-read as Michelle Fletcher meets an architect named Melanie. A lot of M's going on in the names there. But it's not the only book that J. Armstrong's in the charts with right now. No siree, she's currently holding the number one and number two slot in the USA, which is no mean feat, so well done to J.A. And the other book is called First Course, and it's the first instalment of a brand new series by J.A., who's well known for her short sort of novella-length books and series. First Course deals with a chef named Devon who meets a designer named Carrie. And if we know J.A., there will be ructions, there will be romance, and there might just be the odd kiss as their friendship blossoms into something more. So it looks like fans of J.A. Armstrong, who have been bemoaning the end of the other series that J.A. has so successfully cultivated, can all throw their arms up in the air and rejoice because she's not leaving you high and dry. She's creating another series. So hurrah. Also in the top five in the US is Bridget Essex with her book Under Her Spell. Now, this is a little different to the usual romances that dominate the top fives on both sides of the pond. This story concerns Isabella, who's a mediocre witch, which I love. You know, you don't hear of many mediocre witches, do you? She's a mediocre witch who's been cast out of the town that she was living in, and she's now looking for somewhere to settle. And she meets Emily, who's an outcast shapeshifter, who lives alone in the mountains where Isabella ends up. So two outsiders, one big mountain, one new town. I can feel love brewing in her witch's cauldron as I sit here, as I live and breathe. But, you know, a mediocre witch and an outcast shapeshifter. Try saying that when you're drunk. It looks interesting. Also doing well is Gia Hawkins, who's followed up her interestingly titled Must Love Chickens with her new book, Meant to Be. Now, Meant to Be is a book about a girl that got away. The one that got away is a high school reunion tale, and it stars Alice and Misty, who have been wondering for the last 21 years, did I make the wrong decision? I think they did, you know. And they've been wondering, how is Alice? How is Misty? And what's going to happen when they meet again at their high school reunion? I predict stuttering hearts and perhaps some devastating sexy time. But read the book and let me know if my predictions are correct. It's quite funny, isn't it? Because I think that the whole old high school reunion scenario is very popular. And, you know, I can completely understand why, because it makes a great story. But I actually went to a high school reunion, or secondary school reunion, as we call it in in the UK. And it was in a, it wasn't really a big one. It was just a select group of us. It was about 10 or 15 of us from our year, met in a pub in Essex where I grew up. And it was really lovely to see everyone, actually, you know, and you do think, oh, will I recognise these people? What do they look like? What are they going to be doing with their lives? What are they going to be wearing? Where are they going to be living? How many children do they have? All these things. But actually, at ours, nobody found their high school sweethearts because everybody was happily with somebody else. And we just had a couple of pints and laughed about our school days. So that's another way it can go, but it doesn't make for a very good novel. Also in the US, The Language of Hoofbeats by Katherine Ryan Hyde has crept back into the top five. Now, I like to think that's because I keep going on about how good it is. And it is. It's brilliant. And clearly I live in a delusional world where I think I have the power. The power, like She-Ra. A misspent childhood watching She-Ra cartoons, clearly. But anyway, The Language of Hoofbeats is a terrific book about a lesbian couple who foster children. And it's about the life they lead, dealing with their kids, their relationships with their kids. It focuses on the children. It focuses on the community around them and how they react to them. It's a brilliant piece of just general fiction, really. And the fact that they're a lesbian couple is kind of incidental to the plot. But read it. It's life-affirming. I really love that book. Also doing well is Lynn Gardner's Born Out of Wedlock. Also bothering the charts on both sides of the great watery divide. And this one sounds like it deals with a classic tale of love and class. Addison is a no-nonsense go-getter who steps on people to get where she wants to, while Joanna has devoted her life to caring for her ill father. The two women don't get what they bargain for and when they meet. And I like the look of this one because I'm intrigued by reading the blurb, which means the blurb has done its job, right? So, yeah, it looks interesting. And finally, it is great to see Val McDermid in the top five in the UK. This is book one in her Lindsay Gordon series, and it's called Report for Murder, which is now 6 years old, actually, 6 years since its release, but still evergreen. And in fact, I just downloaded it because one of my goals, which I'll speak about later for 2017, is to read more crime fiction. And who better to start that goal with than Val McDermid? I saw Val actually speak at a crime writing festival in London a few months ago. And she was terrific. She was funny, articulate and humble, which is also all a great combination. And, you know, she's been writing for years and has fantastically brilliant success. Also, if you don't follow her on Twitter, you're missing a trick because she's brilliant at shooting down the haters. And as we all know, we're living in a world full of hate at the moment, but Val puts haters in their place. She's a brilliant woman, so all power to Val. Go follow her on Twitter. So it's 2017, everyone. I hope you had a lovely Christmas or holiday time if you don't celebrate Christmas, and a fantastic New Year. I did. We had Christmas here with my parents, which was lovely. And then on New Year's, we hosted dinner for nine. And that was also lovely and very champagne-fueled. I was a bit of a sore head on New Year's Day, but I didn't get out of my dressing gown, I don't think. Just watched movies on TV, which was great. But since then, I've been working like a demon, actually. I'm super motivated for 2017, so that's awesome. And I'm also entering my second year of being a full-time writer. So last year was year one, and things are going well, which I'm really thankful for every day, actually. So thank you to you if you have been supporting my journey by buying my books. I really do appreciate it. So what have I been doing? What have I been working on? Well, the final instalment of the All I Want series, All I Want Forever, comes out at the end of the month on the 27th of January. So it might be out by the time you listen to this, or it might be nearly out, or it might be really out if you're listening 6 months down the line, who knows. But if you do read it, I hope you enjoy the final book in the All I Want series. And honestly, it's kind of sad that it's over, because I've been writing Torin Holly for a year and 4 months now, so it's quite a long time. But I think All I Want Forever bids them a grand and fond farewell that they deserve, and I'm looking forward I'm looking forward to seeing the reactions to it. I hope they're positive. And I'm also looking forward to starting new projects in 2017. So one of those will be the next book in my London series. So the follow-up to London Calling and This London Love. And I was out with a friend last night, actually, who's really good at book titling. He's come up with a couple of titles for my other books. And so I took him out for a pizza and we brainstormed London 3. So I might have a title soon. You never know. I'm really bad at titles, but he's not. So hopefully I'll have a title very soon. So this month, as well as December, was kind of editing All I Want Forever. I wrote it over October and November and then edited it in December. And now I'm just finessing it and getting it ready for publication in January. I've also been setting my goals for 2017, and you can read more about them on my blog at www.clairelydon.co.uk/blog. But I'll give you the bare bones now. For 2017, I've got 10 main goals, and I'm going to break them down so that I can actually achieve them. So that this time next year, I don't look back going, oh, is that what I said? Now, the good thing about it being January is that it's only a few days into the year. It's the 12th of January and I'm recording this. So right now, all those goals seem hugely achievable because there's loads and loads of time to do them in. But I'm hoping that that stays that way as the months slip by. But maybe I should give you an update every month right on the podcast. So this year, one of my goals is to have a positive mental attitude, which is really important when you work on your own and for yourself, because you don't get that positive mental attitude from any colleagues. But it's terrific interacting with other authors and readers, and that all keeps my spirits up. But I'm also going to be... another one of my goals is collaborating with other authors. So that always makes me, you know... Working with other people, it's good to socialise work-wise. So I'm going to go to a few more networking events. I'm doing a couple of talks already. I'm doing a talk for World Book Day in London. I'm doing a talk. I'm going to do a talk at the end of the month. So I'm really excited about 2017 because I'm going to be getting out and about a bit more, and that's good. And that also fits into another one of my goals, which is to get healthier. In 2016, I probably put on a few pounds. I mean, I'm not massively unhealthy or overweight, but I'd like to get fitter and healthier. So get out, move about more. That's another one of my goals. Another one is to keep podcasting. So I hope you're happy about that. I have guests booked up till May, all booked in. So I hope you're going to follow me on the journey podcasting throughout this year. And 2017 is also going to hold a lot of travel for me. So that's another goal. I've got to book some of it still, but the one we've got weddings and anniversaries all over the world this year. So we're going to go for those events, those occasions, and then we're going to tag like a holiday onto the end. So we're going to Hong Kong and Japan. We're going to Canada and America, and we're going to Australia and Southeast Asia. So quite a lot of time zones, quite a lot of continents. We're going to be away for like 2.5 months. So I'm going to have to get used to working on the road. So it's going to be a challenge, but I'm looking forward to it. And it's really nice to have things to look forward to. I'm a very last minute holiday person. So it's really nice to have something to look forward to. So I'm excited about that. One of my big goals as well is to read more diversely. I don't know if that's something that you want to do, but I'm a romance writer and I love reading romance as well. But I'd also, having been to that crime writing festival, I'd like to read a bit more crime. I'd like to maybe branch even out, like go outside my comfort zone, maybe read a bit of science fiction. I really don't like science fiction, but maybe I might like something. I'll give it a go. Or just general recommendations, really, outside of Lesfix. For instance, I saw Patrick Gale do a book reading for his latest book, A Place Called Winter. That was 18 months ago. And I bought a copy of his book and he signed it and I got to meet him and went a bit all giddy because I love Patrick Gale. I still haven't read the book because it's a hardback and I tend to read on my Kindle, so I must remedy that. Read more. And writing wise, I'm going to be writing the third book in the London series and another novel that I've already got a start on, and I'm really excited to do that one as well. So there's lots of goals there for me to tackle, and I'm hoping that I'm going to hit them all, smack them out of the park. Is that mixing my metaphors, mixing my melons? I don't know, but I'm hoping I'm going to get to most of them, if not all of them. So whatever goals you've set for 2017, I hope one of them is to keep listening to the Lesbian Book Club podcast and I hope you meet them. Right, let's get to the interview with A.L. Brooks, who's terrific, and I hope you enjoy it.
So joining me today is UK author A.L. Brooks, who currently resides not all that far from me in good old London Town. She burst onto the lesbian scene last year with her debut novel, The Club, which centred around a lesbian sex club in Manchester and the women who frequented it. And now she's caught the writing bug. Angela has no desire to stop, with new releases on the horizon for 2017, which I'm sure she'll tell us all about. So welcome, Angela.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
And what have you been up to today? Anything exciting?
No, I've been very laid back today. I've been working from home as part of my day job, but working from home. So quite an easy day.
Good. So you're all relaxed and ready to ease into the interview?
Absolutely.
Jolly good. That's what we like to hear. So paint a picture today of where you're speaking from.
I'm speaking from my living room in my flat in London. As you pointed out in the intro, we are near neighbours.
We are. Yeah. Not actually all that far apart, really, for London.
No, exactly. I'm in East London, you're South East, so yeah. Not too far at all. So I'm sitting in my lounge, nice and comfy, just easing into my evening.
Okay. Have you got any Christmas decorations up or not?
I have. It's not a large flat, so I have a very small tree, but I love it. A little 3-foot tree with pretty lights on top. So.
Jolly good. Jolly good. So let's get straight into the writing part. So tell me a bit about your writing journey and how you got started.
I suppose really I got started back when I was a teenager. I have no problem with saying that I was bullied really badly at school. From the age of about 10 to 16. And I started writing stories as a form of escape from that. So I'd squirrel myself away in my bedroom at night and just start writing out stories of all sorts, you know, teenagers and romances and everything. And although obviously didn't do anything with it, I just wrote on and off over the years, but I was never happy with what I wrote. It just didn't come naturally somehow, even though I wanted to write. And then a couple of years ago, it suddenly all started to work. And, the floodgates opened and they haven't been redammed.
Which is good. You don't want that to happen. That's a bad thing.
Definitely not.
and just when you're saying there, you were writing kind of YA stuff because you were in that situation yourself. Is that something you're going to come back to in the future, do you think?
You know, it actually is. I had an idea only very recently for something kind of based on something that happened to me when I was a teenager, but it won't be autobiographical, but I'll use that as a basis for certainly a novella, possibly a novel. Definitely something I'd like to explore, definitely.
Yeah, I was going to say, have you still got like the stories that you wrote back then?
No. Everything got shredded a long time ago.
All right.
Not fit for human consumption.
That's a shame though, isn't it? Because I often think with my, like, I used to write a journal or diary at that time. And, you know, obviously, I like to think that I've progressed and my thoughts and feelings now would be different to my 15-year-old self. But it'd be really interesting to go back and see what, you know, what's in the mind of a teenager.
True.
Yeah. So let's get to your debut novel, The Club, which I have to say I read and I really enjoyed. And but it's quite different from my usual lesbian romances, mainly because it's not a lesbian romance. it's an erotic novel. But it's not just any erotic novel. It is based around a lesbian sex club, tells the stories of the women that go there. So how did you come up with the concept for this?
It's kind of it came from a mishmash of ideas, really. So privately I spent a lot of time single quite a few years ago, but not wanting to be in a relationship, but you know, it would have been quite nice to have the odd little fling here and there, and found it very difficult to get out and meet women, you know, do the whole chatting up at the bar type thing, and often found myself wondering how easy would it be to find somewhere where you didn't have to worry about that kind of stuff, you know. And also I had discussions with friends over the years about, you know, when you're just interested in something physical, what are the options that are available? I mean, gay men obviously had dark rooms. That's been quite a sort of thing for them for years. But everyone said, well, there's no lesbian equivalent, you know, and no matter how hard you looked, you couldn't find them. And I think, I don't know why, but this just idea came back to me one day and I started writing a story about it and then kind of wrote a book.
Mm-hmm. And do you know if there is an actual real-life equivalent? I've no idea. I've read I've read sort of similar things in other fictional settings, but
I have been told that there is something that runs in London perhaps every 2 or 3 months.
Right. Okay.
And it's literally one night every 2 or 3 months.
Right. Okay.
But yeah.
So your setting is Manchester, which is very British in its charm. So what made you set it up there?
Two reasons mainly. One, because when I started writing, it seemed too obvious to set it in London. I mean, I've lived in London for years. I know London very well. A lot of lesbian books, UK lesbian books that I've read, are set in London. I kind of felt like London...
Guilty as charged.
Yeah, no, obviously no offence to yourself. love your books.
Yeah, yeah.
but I just thought it was time for a bit of a change.
Yeah.
But actually what mainly drove it was... So the first story I wrote that became the club was Max's chapter. And one of Max's key things is that she doesn't want to go to a sex club in London because she lives in London and she doesn't want to risk run the risk of seeing someone that she knows or someone seeing her.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of made sense that she would go out of city, and then it was like, well, okay, where's another big gay destination in the UK? And Manchester was the immediate thought that came to mind.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Are you familiar with Manchester?
I've been a few times. I do like it as a city, but I wouldn't say I'm like hugely familiar with it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. No, it was. It was very. It felt very real to me, though. I came out in Manchester, so because I went to.
Oh, cool.
I went to the university at Keele, so that was like, you know, sort of 45 minutes on the train. That's where I used to spend all my Saturday nights.
And I did do a lot of research on it, and I did go up there and visit, you know, and just get a feel for the area. And,
yeah.
Where people might live and where they might work, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that was a hardship, I'm sure.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
Now I love Manchester as a city, so that's really cool. So, yes, as we said, it's about a sex club, but it's very character driven, as any good book is. And I love the club owner Mandy and her evolving story. And I also love Lou and Stephanie, who were the kind of the romance included. Did you have a favourite character? Because there's quite a mishmash of stories going on.
Don't make me choose my favourite child.
I know.
I mean, obviously I like all my characters for different reasons. I mean, I wouldn't have written them the way I did without that. You know, that's probably an obvious statement, but it's very true for me with this book. I mean, I really enjoyed telling Mandy's story. I liked the fact that she was trying to give back to a new generation something that she'd never had for herself. That was a key part of her character that I really loved writing. And I loved her journey. I've got a soft spot for Lou. You know, the fact that she has a great arc in that book, I think.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. And I think I've met Mandy quite a few times. So, you know, she's kind of motherly as well, isn't she?
Yeah, to everyone that comes in there. It was a real fun trying to flesh out her character and really give her some depth, because she had the longest story, obviously, because it went over 30-odd years. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And right at the end, you kind of leave it on a cliffhanger. So will there be any more of Mandy's story or anybody else's stories in the club?
I deliberately left two stories unfinished, and I do fully intend to revisit them at some point, yes.
As sort of independent stories?
Absolutely. So possibly even only in a short story, but actually I can imagine getting at least two novellas or novels out of them. Yeah, I do have some ideas. Definitely.
All right, cool. That's good to know, because I'd be interested in Mandy's story.
Yeah. she's definitely one of them. Yeah. Max is the other.
So. Okay, right, cool. And what do you think makes a good rounded character? Because like you say, that she has a good... There's a lot of sort of droplets of Mandy throughout the book, but there's a lot more to explore.
Exactly. For me, what always gets me with a character is someone who's genuine. I don't want someone who's, like, it's written that it's completely unbelievable who they are. You know, they have to be really genuine. But they don't have to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, flaws are good, because you need to see them struggling with something, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get inside a character's head. For me, anyway, you want to know what makes them tick. Why are they where they are right now? What brought them to this point? And what's actually going to take them forward now to become a better person or become more of themselves than they want to, than they've ever wanted to be, or whatever it is that's going to they're going to face, you know, challenge or direction or growth. You want to know what's brought them to that point and where they're going to go from there on. That to me is what makes a good character.
Yeah, No, very good answer. And they say as well that your first novel is quite autobiographical. Now, I noticed, having a look around your website, that Lou, one of your key characters, goes to the gym and likes jazz music. Now, you go to the gym and like jazz music. So being Inspector Clouseau that I am, how much of yourself was put into this book, and was more of it put into Lou, or were there bits of yourself in all the different characters?
No one character is me in that book at all. But yes, there are little bits of me scattered throughout, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fair point. The first time you write something full length, or certainly that's my experience and my knowledge from other writers, is it is very autobiographical. You just can't help it because you're writing what you know. There's lots of bits of me scattered around. People who know me well, who've read the book, have spotted bits and had a little chuckle.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, some of my friends and family still think that every book I write is just me. So I keep having to point out it's not.
Not if it is, you've led quite a life.
I know, right? So let's talk about sex, particularly writing it. Now, you describe yourself on your site as a writer of filth, which I love. So tell me, what's the secret to writing a good sex scene? So I'll take notes, right?
Worry, I think I've written some fairly good ones myself. For me, from reading them and writing them, it's getting that really good balance between the actual physical act of what's happening between the two characters, two women, hopefully, because obviously we're talking lesbian fiction.
Yeah.
But you've got to wrap that up in the emotion of it and the feeling of it, and that doesn't necessarily mean they have to be in love with each other. I mean, certainly in erotic fiction that doesn't necessarily have to be true, although often it is. But it's no good just saying, you know, she lifted her hand and cupped her breast. It's like, okay, that's lovely, but what's she feeling when she does that? What reaction does that give her doing it and the woman who's receiving it? You know, as soon as you start wrapping it all of that up into the actual mechanics of it, you get something that's erotic rather than an IKEA instruction manual or a gynecological textbook, you know. And I've seen both written in so-called erotic fiction, and it makes me cringe every time.
Yeah.
Because it's not just about mechanics at all.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Yeah, it's all about the emotion, really. Especially so in romance books.
Yeah.
And I would say the club kind of straddles erotic and romance. I know it's sort of, it's bound to fall in erotic because of its subject, but there was quite a romantic theme going on in quite a lot of the stories.
Absolutely, and that was one of the key things that I wanted to bring into it, because the whole premise of the club is that it isn't just about sex for some of the women that go there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you've said that you didn't actually go to a sex club, which is disappointing.
Unfortunately, no.
Disappointing. Must try harder.
Absolutely.
But did you do a lot of other research, like reading a lot of other erotica books and perhaps overall sex books? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I have been a fan of erotica for a while. So, I mean, I obviously had some stories in the back of my head that I'd read by other authors that I enjoyed or not enjoyed. So, you know, I used both good kind of grounding for it.
Uh-huh.
I did research on the internet about sex clubs. Obviously didn't get very far because there aren't any, but even that was an interesting search because clearly I wasn't the only one searching.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. If anyone's listening, there's a business opportunity right
yes,
there.
Absolutely. I also had some fun researching dungeon builders for the Red Room, the BDSM room.
Oh yeah. So,
that was quite educational.
Yeah.
Even for me.
Yeah. You described all that very well. Yeah. Yeah. So good, well researched.
Yes.
And did you get a bit overwriting so many sex scenes, or was it a challenge coming up with variety?
No, I was like a kid in a candy shop. Yeah, no, I had great fun. I didn't have any problem coming up with ideas for scenarios and pairings and numbers of people involved. And yeah, no, I really enjoyed it.
Okay, cool. And obviously the question everyone wants to know, how did people you know react when they read it? Were they shocked?
Yeah, some were, yeah. It was quite interesting, actually. I didn't actually intend to come out as a writer of lesbian fiction at work in my day job. I'm happily out as lesbian, but I wasn't so keen on telling them that I was writing this erotic book,
mm-hmm.
as you know, I'm sure you can imagine why.
Yeah.
So just a bit of background, I work in corporate financial systems. I work in a finance department, you know, we're all accountants and, you know, fairly conservative. But I got outed by a colleague, which we joke about now. And to be fair, my entire office rallied behind me and were amazing. They all bought copies of the book. They were all encouraging me every step of the way. They all came to the launch party.
Amazing.
Yeah, and some of them have read it. And to be, again, to give them credit, they've come in and gone, no, it's really well written. I really enjoyed it. And I'm just going, yeah, can we just stop talking about that now? Because, you know. So, yeah, I found it more embarrassing than them, I think. But
yeah, yeah.
But it's been very positive. It's been lovely.
Good. Good. And are they all clamouring for your next book now?
Yeah, they're all asking when the next party is, so yeah.
Yeah, it's all about the party.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where did you have your launch party?
I went to a bar near where we work in central London. Okay. You can hire it as a private bar, and it was great, actually. It was a really good private venue. Lots of champagne.
Right.
Probably a bit too much, but...
Sounds good.
Yep.
So, this was your debut novel, so how was writing it? How long did it take you to do?
This one took a while, but it's kind of because it was a very organic process, because it actually started as a single short story. The chapter about Max was actually the starting point. And as soon as I'd finished writing that short story, 2 weeks later, my brain was going, okay, so the woman that Max was with, Lou, why was she at the club? What was her story? And all of a sudden, I was writing her story. So it kind of evolved over a number of months. It's not like I sat down to write a novel.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually took ages. I mean, it took, well, for me, it seems like it took ages. It took probably 6 to 9 months to write it by the time I actually started putting it all together.
Right. Which is not that, you know, ages.
It's not that long, but yeah, I've subsequently written 2 novels this year. So to me, it seems like that first one took a long time. But...
You're just showing off now, aren't you?
I'm not intending to.
Yeah. Because 6 to 9 months for a debut novel is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, actually, once, like I said to you earlier, that when the floodgates opened, it's like they just didn't stop, and then I literally couldn't stop writing thousands of words a week. It was just really just pouring out of me. So
okay,
which was amazing.
So all these words pouring out of you, like you said, you've written 2 other novels already, and you work full time. So how do you fit it in? How do you fit your writing in around your work?
Yeah, I'm quite fortunate in that I rarely do overtime in my day job. So I'm home at a reasonable time each evening, and as long as I haven't spent huge amounts of time staring at my computer screen during the day, I can actually get an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours of writing in an evening if I'm really in the mood.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously weekends, I can do a lot of writing at weekends. And if I'm, you know, on a good week, I can probably knock out 10,000-15,000 words if I'm really on a roll. Which is a really good pace to be writing at.
Yeah, terrific. Yeah, really good. Yeah. So let's talk about your weekends then, which I suppose are more your writing days. Do you write better at a certain time, in a certain place, or do you change it up?
Do you know, it's actually changed. That's evolving, even as we speak. When I first started writing, I couldn't write in the mornings at all. I've no idea why that was, but I just couldn't get into the mood or get my brain going, whatever it was. So I'd invariably end up writing until late into the night. You know, I'd still be at my MacBook at 10, 11 o'clock at night. And then gradually that's changed. The more I've got into the habit of writing, the more it's become a part of my routine. I can now write anytime, anywhere. I mean, I write in cafes, on aeroplanes, at my lovely desk at home, any time of day. It really doesn't seem to matter now. And that's another great thing about fitting it around my day job, because it means that I can be really flexible about when I can write and when I can fit the time in.
Sounds like you've trained yourself to do this, right?
Oh, yeah, so. I think I have, but not even as a conscious thing. It's just kind of happened as I've written more.
Yeah. And when you say you write on air, I guess you write straight onto a laptop when you're at home?
Yeah, I've got the smallest MacBook you can have, so
okay.
It's very portable, yeah.
So, and that's when you're on a plane, you're doing that as well?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and trying not to let people look over my shoulder, especially if I'm writing a sex scene.
I can't imagine writing a sex scene on a plane.
I've written a couple, actually. And, yeah, it's kind of... I've got really sunk into them, and then suddenly they're telling me to put the MacBook away, and I'm like, no, I can't. She's just in the middle of...
No! I've just bought... I'm next year I've got a couple of long haul flights, so I've just bought a Neo. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They're they're sort of like a block of plastic with a tiny screen and a massive keyboard, but it's got a 700-hour battery life. So on four AA batteries. A lot of people said to me that it's really good for writing on planes, so I'm going to test the theory this year, next year.
So. Sounds good.
Yeah. So, and when you're writing, do you have a word count you go for, or is it just till you flake out?
No, it's just whatever comes out that day. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have a target in mind at all, and I don't punish myself either or beat myself up if I don't do so many words in an evening. If it's only 1,000 in an evening, well, that's what I was ready to write for the day. You know, that's, some days I've done really well. I mean, I had a record breaking day recently. I wrote 7,000 words in a day, which was amazing because I literally just couldn't stop.
Well done, that's really good.
Most sessions, if I on a weekend, I can write probably around 2,000 to 3,000, and then an evening is more like 1,500, but I don't go in with a set idea in my mind at all. Mm-hmm. It's just whatever happens.
Yeah. And you said you've written a couple of other books. So what's next for you? When is the next novel due out, and what's that about? Is it a similar kind of vein?
Okay, so it's due out in February. It's called Dark Horse, and it's most definitely not in a similar vein. I'm doing something very different. This one is going to be set in Australia, and it's much more of a kind of drama with a romance. So, yes, there's some sexy scenes in there, but it's more of the romantic sexy scenes rather than erotic sexy scenes.
Okay.
But it's set in Australia, which is a country I lived in for a while and I absolutely loved. And so it's kind of like my little homage to my love of Australia.
Okay. What bit of Australia is it set in?
It's set in Victoria. So it's actually set in a town called Ballarat, which is just over an hour's drive from Melbourne. And I lived in Melbourne and I visited Ballarat quite a few times because I have friends there.
Right.
So I've kind of set it all around that area, and a little bit set in Sydney as well.
Okay. Are your friends there looking forward to it?
Yes, they are. They helped me with research for the book, so they're very excited about it coming out.
Cool. And you publish with Ilva Publishing, who are a fab and relatively new publisher based in Germany with writers all over the world. So how has that experience been for you?
Do you know, it's been absolutely wonderful from the minute I first got involved with them. They are so professional, so enthusiastic about quality lesbian fiction, and about creating a little community that we can all be a part of and sharing that experience together. It is literally like being part of a family. It's a wonderful experience. I couldn't be happier with my publisher. I really couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been an amazing experience. Really supportive as well. You get loads of advice, you know, about how to do social media and marketing and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, they're really helpful. Really, especially for, you know, I came into it brand new, knowing absolutely nothing about publishing whatsoever.
Yeah.
And just feel like I've been encouraged every step of the way.
Oh, no, that's great to hear. And it's great to have them on the scene as well, because, you know, a few years ago, well, I don't know how long they've been going, about sort of 4 years?
Four years, I think it is. Yeah.
So it was. It's good to have somebody challenging the American publishers as well.
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of us who write for them feel like, especially those of us that are based in Europe or based in Australasia, you know. It's nice to have something that's a bit more Eurocentric, or at least not US-centric, and that's no offence to the US publishers at all, but, you know, the US publishers tend to publish US authors.
Yeah, so it's nice to address the balance
of it. Yeah, absolutely.
And with Ilva, you went to the Frankfurt Book Fair recently, which is one of the four major book fairs around the globe every year. So what was your experience there? Did you get the impression that lesbian fiction is being treated with more respect, going a bit more mainstream?
I have to say, from what we saw in Frankfurt, no.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it was quite surprising, actually, for me anyway. I mean, I went there with no expectations whatsoever, but I mean, you think of the hundreds of stalls that are at the Frankfurt Book Fair, which if anybody's never been, it's enormous. It's just, it was so big, it just made your head spin.
Yeah, I've only ever been to London, but I'm assuming it's very similar.
Yeah, hundreds and hundreds of stalls and publishers and, you know, people involved in the book world, and three stalls that were queer publishing of any kind. So incredibly small still. It's quite expensive to exhibit at something like that, so very difficult, I guess, for smaller publishers to actually even get a foothold there. I mean, we spent some time wandering around looking for queer representation in the whole fair, and we found lots of it, but we had to hunt.
Right.
So, yeah, not really not really front and centre at all, very much still hidden away.
But what was the reaction to you being there? Did you get a lot of positive reactions, people coming up to the stall? Or?
We didn't have a stall. No,
oh, you didn't?
We were just there as visitors.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you had a stall. Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, obviously Astrid, who's the publisher of Astrid of Ilva,
yeah.
She spent a lot of time meeting other publishers and having, you know, discussions and stuff.
Yeah.
And trying to build up a network of smaller publishers who are focused on queer publishing.
Okay.
So I know she made some really good contacts.
Cool. And you said that Ilva was giving you advice on social media for authors. So what marketing strategies have you used to promote your books?
I haven't really done a huge amount on that yet. I'm still learning what I can and want to do. So, I mean, obviously you mentioned I've got a website, I've got a Facebook page, I'm on a load of social media all the time, I'm on Twitter, I'm doing that kind of stuff. I've done a couple of events this year, so I appeared at Elfest, did a reading there. Which, for those not in the UK, it's a massive women-only festival in the middle of summer, which means rainy, in Britain.
Very true.
And it did rain, and it was very cold, even though it was the middle of July.
I did get sunburnt there last year, so that was the one year.
Oh, right, okay.
it was still freezing in the evening, though.
Yeah. I'm still kind of learning. I do a blog about once a month. I put out a blog on my website. I'm still learning on things that are available, but also that I feel comfortable doing. I mean, I think like a lot of authors, I'm a little bit of an introvert, and so selling myself, so to speak, is something I struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
So I am starting to think about trying new things, definitely. So watch this space.
Okay. we're going to have, sort of extrovert videos of you soon, I can tell, right? Big props.
Possibly not.
Singing, dancing. I keep threatening, but I haven't done it yet.
Okay.
And as you said, you are on a few forums or Facebook groups that I am also on. And
yes.
I know that you're a very avid reader of lesfic as well, right?
I am, yes.
You seem to read an awful lot of lesfic and fanfic as well. So sort of how many books do you say you get through a week?
I would easily get through 3 or 4 books a week, I think.
Right, gosh.
I've got my commute to my day job is my reading time, really.
Uh-huh.
And I commute nearly 2 hours a day, one hour each way. So, and I'm a fast reader, so I can get through books. I mean, a lot of lesbian fiction, we're only talking about 70,000 words. That's not, you know, that many pages to get through, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I do find it quite easy to read 3 or 4 books a week.
Yeah.
And I do tend to focus mainly on lesfic. I just absolutely love it. I just love our whole genre, all different, subgenres within it, and I just love exploring it, finding new authors. Yeah, so.
And is this something that you've been doing more of since you've been writing it, do you think? Or have you been an avid reader of lesfic for quite a while?
I've been an avid reader for quite a while, but I probably have ramped up a little bit since I've been writing. And it's not like I'm scouting out the competition, but it's just being a writer now and being published, it's literally made me see how much more is out there and how much more I just want to absorb to mm-hmm. see what everybody else is writing.
Yeah.
And the stories we're telling, I just think it's fascinating. There's just so many different stories out there.
Yeah. No,
it's wonderful.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think I don't read as much as I'd like because I work from home, so I don't have a commute.
Yeah.
I used to read a lot more when I worked outside the house. So, I'd like to read more. And I agree with you that the scope of lesbian fiction is huge. So,
yeah, I think it's brilliant. I think I love the fact that that's expanded so much in the last few years. I think it's long overdue and it's very welcome.
Mm-hmm. And in your short writing career, is there any piece of advice, writing advice that stands out for you?
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day and I can't think who it was who told me, but it is so absolutely true if you think about what I told you about my journey for writing earlier. Write what you feel is what I was told, and I realised that's what was going wrong with my earlier writing. I was writing what I thought people wanted to read rather than what I wanted to say,
mm-hmm.
If you understand the difference.
Yeah.
And in turning my hand to lesfic, not trying to write for mainstream but trying to write for my community, that's where it's naturally started to flow so much better than it ever did before.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a pretty good bit of advice.
Yeah.
unless you're writing horror story or serial killers.
Yeah,
don't do that, yeah.
Worried,
yeah. And final question, if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
Yeah. like a bit of a strange mashup, but Jane Austen, which I've only started reading her books in the last couple of years. I've shied away from the classics for a number of reasons, but I am completely hooked on her wit and her acerbic comments about society and gender, and yeah, I just love that. And J.K. Rowling, who has just got the most incredible imagination, and I know she's got her fans and not fans, but I just think the breadth of her imagination is just stunning, and to have that in combination with Jane Austen's wit and intelligence is just fantastic.
No, I think that's a great mashup, and they're great reasons as well, actually. I must admit, I've never ever read a J.K. Rowling book because I'm not a fan of sort of fantasy or Harry Potter-esque things. But I went to see Fantastic Beasts this week at the cinema, and I quite enjoyed that. So I was thinking of it from a writer's perspective and thinking, wow, her imagination is pretty awesome. Yeah, so,
exactly.
So it's a good choice. Very good choice.
Thank you.
And where can people find out more about you?
They can find me on Facebook, A.L. Brooks Writer. They can find my website, albrookswriter.com, and I'm on Twitter, albrookswriter1. So anybody can follow me on any of those places, and they can direct message me, get in contact with me, and I would very heartily welcome it.
Okay, lovely. Well, thank you so much, Anja. This has been brilliant.
Thank you, Claire. It's been fab.
Yeah, and good luck with the books.
Thank you very much.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club, so this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you fancy dipping into any of my books, the All I Want series, the London series, Nothing to Lose, or The Long Weekend, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk, or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes, or any of the other digital outlets. I'm also on Twitter at Claire Lydon, I'm on Facebook, claire.lydon, and I'm on Instagram at clairefic. Thanks to Denise at My Lesbian Radio for hosting and producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. And make sure you tune in to The Lesbian Lounge with Denise for all the latest LGBT news, views, interviews and gossip. And also tune in to Ragtime, which is another great show on the Lesbian Lounge platform. If you have a spare couple of minutes, we'd also love a review from you at iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean or wherever you listen to this podcast. So that'd be brilliant. Join me next time for more hot book club action, where I will be interviewing New York author Anne Aptica. See you then.